is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. I want to say thank you to everybody that wished my mother a happy, happy birthday yesterday. I know that she really, really appreciated it. And thank you to my DJ for finding a brand new birthday song for me to put on my list of songs. Let me tell y'all what y'all need in your life. Y'all need people who, when they hear it's your birthday, will break out in song and dance immediately to herald the arrival or the solar return of the king or queen. That's what you need in your life. Trust me. And we need to be prepared to do that for each other. We all get one day a year to feel special on this plantation, in this capitalist system, and let us help each other feel as special as we are. It just takes a little tiny bit of energy from us to do that. This week is Road Safety Week. Guys, if you, like me, got stuck in traffic for 2 days in a row wondering why is the traffic still on the road at this hour, I think it may be due to Road Safety Week, which I guess I should be happy for because it certainly slowed down traffic. But perhaps it's counterproductive if you don't explain to people why the traffic has been slowed down. Then you have a number of things happening. You have the typical response, which is, well, if I can be 30 minutes late, I might as well be an hour late and just slow this ride right down and go sightseeing. I'm accusing a lot of y'all on the road of that this morning. Also, do y'all know that obstructing traffic is an offense? You can't just stop your car because somebody in the corner looks like they desperately want to come out. That is an actual traffic offense. So when people behind you are blowing their horn, they're reminding you to carry on smartly. Keep driving unless there's been a forced stop in traffic. There's no need for you to stop to let people out. The roads were designed to encourage the smooth flow of traffic. And in those spaces where they were not designed properly, we agitate for them to be changed. Why? Because we are in charge of ourselves and our own country. It's not like we live on an actual plantation like some of the countries I may reference today, where you can't breathe without permission. You actually in the Bahamas have the right to protest, and you can protest anything. And what we can be doing, as opposed to looking for hookups and roundabouts and shortcuts, we can be spending our energy fixing the problems we attempt to avoid. I want to remind you all today that you can only turn left on red at one intersection, and you can only make one quadrant, only one quadrant of that intersection allows you to turn left on red. Do you all hear what I'm saying? I'm speaking specifically to the people who like to turn right on red at Shirley and Mackey Street, specifically to the person who stared me down to show me that they were prepared to drive straight into my car as they looked at their red light that was stopping them from entering Shirley Street. In this Road Safety Week, I beg the Royal Bahamas Police Force to begin enforcing traffic controls, first with your own force members and then with the general public. I wish that I could say these things anonymously. I wish that I could hide in a crevice in the far corners of the internet and say all of the things I say on the radio anonymously without fear of repercussion, without fear of people identifying me and attempting to victimize me. Oh, I wish that I lived on a wild, is it unfettered? No, I just being fancy now. A wild, untamed plantation where I could go hide in the caves and the crooks and put my phone in the air and connect to internet and share all of my thoughts and concerns with the universe. But alas, it is 2023, and I think that the days of anonymity are well, well behind us. And if you are living an anonymous life right now, I would love to know who you are.
You'd be living in the bush.
I would love to know who you are, but be careful. That may be a trick to destroy the one last bastion of anonymity that you have carved out for yourself. So this morning on this World News Tuesday with Mark Palmer, I've asked Mr. Cecil Newry to join Mark and I in a conversation. What I want to talk about this morning is really more like of a conversation, and I'm glad you gentlemen have come to join me this morning to talk about it. Something in my spirit, I want to talk about anonymity and privacy. And anonymity versus privacy, looking at both of them, comparing them to each other. And because I really think, I like chastising the government. I can say it. I can disclose it. No more private thoughts, right? I really think the government doesn't understand the culture, the work that they have to take on in shifting the culture to prepare the Bahamian people for the new policies that they're trying to implement. I don't think they take into account the extent to which culture becomes a barrier to policy implementation and the ways in which they can engage the general public, even if they're not going to engage them in consultation. We say a moment of silence for dead parliamentary principles. Even if they're not going to consult the people in developing the policy, you know, at the very least, they should engage, you know, in the people at some point. And I want us to have a conversation to prepare people for things, again, like our immigration conversation that I see on the horizon and people should be prepared for. And the reason I see it on the horizon, I'm not a prophet, I'm not a seer or an oracle, I don't read the future. These are the things that I've been considering and forced to consider in my personal life in regards to these policies. And I think this conversation should be brought to the table. It's a conversation that you should be having with your peers. It's a conversation that you should be having with your parents, no matter what age you are. Mm-hmm. And it's a conversation you need to have with your children. Anonymity versus privacy. Now, anonymity refers to the state of not having a name or identifying information associated with an individual, while privacy refers to the state of being able to control who has access to your personal information and how that information is used. Now, if you have grown up a Bahamian child, then you have been negotiating and navigating issues of privacy with your parents and the adults around you for a very long time. You lived in a state where you don't even have the right to keep your feelings private, right? We've entered an age where parents are regularly disciplining their children on camera and sharing that experience with the entire world. We offer our children neither privacy nor anonymity anymore. In fact, some of us take away social media in a very narcissistic way, don't see our children as having an identity or a self separate from the parent and thus having no authority to determine what is shared and what isn't shared by the parent or by self. And so I think this is a conversation Bahamians can grasp onto from their lived experience, right? But also a conversation that we should have as we are walking into the future. One of the most important conversations ever.
Well, now, you know how you always talk about the Constitution, and you push everything back to the Constitution. Well, I looked at the in advance of this segment, I looked at our Constitution to see what it actually said about
privacy.
The right to privacy. Yeah. And there are only the word is only mentioned three times in the entire Constitution, and it relates to privacy of property.
Yeah.
So this is the, you know, the ability of somebody to come in and search your property or come into your property. It is your property. But I didn't see anything to do regarding privacy of information the Constitution.
Or privacy of body. Bodily privacy, right?
Bodily autonomy, the privacy to that. I didn't see anything mentioned there. But you can imagine that wouldn't be mentioned because it was written 50 years ago. And the kind of things that we're talking about now weren't even on the radar then.
Well, I'm definitely not in the Bahamas, and I wondered to what extent it was on the radar globally and what the response to it was. Now, audience, I'm going to be honest. I didn't get enough time to do that much research for the show, but I'm hoping we could extend this conversation with a whole bunch of different actors, right? Like, I want to bring in Mr. Nuri. The reason I have you here today is because you got a hookup to a boy I know named Mr. Kamal Nuri, a security specialist, you know, and I want to bring him into the conversation at some point as well. But Roger Clark's four categories of privacy outlined in 1997, like you say, Mark, very new concepts. They include privacy of the person, privacy of personal data, privacy of personal behavior, and privacy of personal communication. Privacy of the person has always been referred to as bodily privacy and is specifically related to the integrity of a person's body. Some writers have argued that namelessness, though technically correct, does not capture what is more centrally at stake in contexts of anonymity. So anonymity is not just, I don't know this person's name. The important idea here is that a person be non-identifiable, unreachable, or untrackable.
Well, you can't have a phone. That's the first thing. If you want to be anonymous, you've got to ditch your phone and all your social media. Even just the act of going on a website, I don't know if our listeners even aware how much lack of privacy you have for your own data. There's a certain built-in Java code in many websites called Metapixel. And what this does is when you surf on that web, it captures your IP address. There's no right to do that. It captures your IP address, but also, say you're on WebMD and you are, you know, researching. Say you have a prostate problem, you're researching. Then when you captures that information, if you have a medication, you buy a medication online, it'll capture that information. It'll triangulate that with your, say you make an appointment online to see your doctor and you're not even aware that any of this is happening. And somebody there has that data and able to identify, maybe not your name, maybe they will. If you don't have a Facebook account, they won't be able to identify your name. But if you have a Facebook account, they'll be able to link that IP address to a particular person. That's pretty scary stuff, isn't it? That means anything that you do now online is captured in some way without you knowing it.
And so in doing some research last night, I found, let me read this excerpt I found online. The question is, what are the international privacy laws? There is no legal instrument dealing with the privacy of individuals on an international scale. Rather, there are territorial privacy laws which are applicable within certain countries or regions. These laws provide a legal framework on how to collect, use, and store the personal data of natural persons. The most prominent examples of privacy laws. Now, with natural persons, I imagine that means the human person versus the corporation that can be a person. Since isn't the law wild? The most prominent examples of privacy laws include the EU General Data Protection Regulation, the EU E-Privacy Directive, California Consumer Privacy Act, the California Online Privacy Protection Act, and the Personal Information Protection and Electronic Documents Act of Canada. Now, in the Bahamas, we have the, where is the name of that act? We have the Data Protection Privacy of Personal Information Act 2003. We only have one piece of legislation. But this international legislation, right, in particular, the EU, the first EU Act, the General Data Protection Regulation, for GDPR to apply, a data controller or processor does not have to reside in the EU. So the person who is processing the data doesn't have, they could live in the Bahamas, right? If such a controller or processor offers goods or services or monitors the online behavior of individuals in the EU, then such an organization has to comply with the GDPR despite being established outside the EU. So a Bahamian group, a website, an organization who is looking for feedback, monitoring, you know, looking at its users, website users' interaction, and some of those users are in EU countries, then that service provider, the person who hosts, I think, that website, then must conform to or adhere to these policies.
Well, if you look at our data protection laws, they're pretty specific about what you can do with a consumer's data. And it has to be used for a specific purpose, etc. So how does that... So, you know, saying all that, how does you going on TikTok? TikTok's a big company in China, right?
Yeah.
And they're able to track your keystrokes without your consent, yeah. Right? So how does that work? How does the Bahamas Data Protection Act get enforced
Mark, I can tell you the first thing is this. I went online to read the document. Mm-hmm. If they try to keep the information in their private, they're doing a good job because it is so hard to understand. And the limited time I had available to me, I was not able to, like, I have some excerpts printed here, but uh-huh. I can't speak to it definitively.
Authority, yeah.
With any authority uh-huh. because it's so difficult to understand. But we do have one piece of legislation. It is, again, the Data Protection or Privacy of Personal Information Act 2003. And I want to get into it in a second. But I got some questions I want to throw out there before we get into the act. And I really, it's just the part of the act that I pulled out was I was looking for all of the parts of the act that speak to the right of the, I think they call it the data user, the person who mm-hmm. the data belongs to or mm-hmm. the data is about.
Yeah.
Right? And the reason I did that was because as I began my research, the first set of information I found was from the Philippines. And the Philippines had a really, I want to say they've done an extensive amount of work in preparation for their act. And I found this site called Data Privacy Philippines. I just want to read this quickly. The Data Privacy Act of 2012 was passed to extend protection to people and their data in this modern age. It provides a regime for regulating the processing and storage of particularly personal and sensitive information. Given the new avenues of information exchange that have opened up and continue to open up in this era. This regulation is achieved through the recognition of rights accorded to data subjects and through the imposition of obligations upon entities that deal with the information of such data subjects. In order to understand how the Data Privacy Act provides protection, and more importantly, in order for any individual to be able to benefit from its protections, it is important to understand the concept of a data mm-hmm. subject as well as his rights. So the Philippine Act is telling you, like, our legislation is rooted in...
And it has some great rights. If you look at it,
yeah.
you know, it has some really powerful things in there, but in practice...
Right,
how will that
question.
Work? That's the question.
And so the 8 rights to privacy in the Philippines are rights that belong to data subjects, namely the right to be informed, the right to access, the right to object, the right to erasure and blocking, the right to rectify, that's to fix, correct the records, the right to file a complaint, the right to damages, and the right to data portability. Now, when I go into the Bahamian Act, well, first of all, I didn't find any information. Like, this is like a, we call it like an abstract, right? This is like the preamble. It's like, it explains to you what you about to read. It gives you a sense, it gives you some context. You could understand the document. Yeah. I didn't find anything like that when looking for
but
our
it
local.
It isn't specified in that particular way, but some of those rights are covered by yeah. our, you know, like, for example, the right to access, the right to object, I believe that is in there, the right to file a complaint.
Yeah, right of rectification and erasure. Yeah.
I don't believe there's a right to damages, though, but I'd have to check it again. It does cover it, but not in that specific way.
Right, and this is the part that concerns me. The language is so difficult to read and understand. I wonder to what extent legal practitioners can understand it. And what are the opportunities available locally, right, to learn the law, to understand how it functions? And if there are any test cases yet, right, if there are any test mm-hmm. cases that people could use to understand how the judges read the law. But so it's very interesting. Exceptions to right to access, mm-hmm. right of access, right of rectification or erasure, right to prohibit processing for purposes of direct marketing. duty of care owed by data controller and disclosure of personal data in certain cases are some of the provisions in the act that are very interesting. And you can find the act online. Just search Data Protection Privacy of Personal Information Act 2003. I'm going to encourage everybody to download this.
So here's my problem with the act. A lot of it, because it may not have been tested, or may, I'm not aware of the data protection having been tested.
I haven't seen any test cases yet.
Because I can immediately see some problems, you know, that, you know, data shall be adequate, relevant, and not excessive. What does that mean? You know, how do you test that? Data shall be kept for only one or more specified and lawful purposes.
Right.
I mean.
So basically, the first part, what they're saying is you are not allowed to collect or store or hold more data than is absolutely necessary for the purpose that you have the data.
Correct.
So this is not.
But what if you have an undisclosed purpose, like these, like TikTok, Facebook, some of these websites, they have undisclosed purposes in terms of.
Well, I think what they're going to say is, did you read the fine print?
Well, yeah, click the and then, okay.
Right, and then you have to say, well, listen, I didn't have 75 days in a row to sit down and go through all this fine print. And I think that's a technical point that's being argued in the U.S. and in an international court. The nature of the terms and agreement section of these applications, of these apps, right? And the idea that it's not only improbable, but impractical that somebody would read all of that before they click OK.
Because we just click OK because we want to get on with our search, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so that is being, I think that's being queried in courts of law around the world. But it's an important point. I think they're going to say, but we printed it. It's available. If you took the time to read it, you would have found it, right? And again, this is very important for parents. Parents with children, making sure your children understand the difference between anonymity and privacy, and how they can create a bit of anonymity online, and how they should always be working to protect their privacy. Producer, let's go to that call. Good morning. Oh, you just picked it up.
I think he heard you. So.
I think the caller realized that maybe they want to be a little anonymous. I see another one coming in. We're going to get to you right now. Caller. And we're going to get to these texts. I still haven't put these questions out there. Let's go to the caller. Good morning, caller. You are on the clock.
According to this, I can wait along with you on your panel, Aaron.
Good morning, Bremen. How are you doing?
Would you turn up your volume, please?
I'm sorry. Is that better?
It is a little better, yeah.
Okay, good, good.
I'm holding, thank God. We need justice, law, and order in this country.
Yes, sir.
Take for instance, right? Speaking about reading the fine print, right? People that are blind, people who haven't got the understanding to read the fine print or cannot read properly, right? People who can't afford a lawyer, they have no rights.
You're right. Their access is limited, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So this government, or the Bahamian government, got to stop jiving, think Bahamian people are foolish, you know.
We also, though, as Bahamian people, we need to organize, Bremen, and use the resources.
I didn't hear you.
I said, as Bahamian people, we need to organize and use the resources available to us to create mechanisms to support other Bahamians who are not having an easy time navigating these systems.
Yeah, and the thing is, when those such an authority realize that's what you're doing or wants to do, they're going to put obstacles in your way.
That's a why, babe. I agree with you, Bremen. But listen, I got another caller on the line.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Let's go to this next caller quickly. Good morning, caller.
Yes, good morning, Ms. Green.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm all right for now. Good morning to Mr. Palmer.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yeah, you know, Aaron, very interesting conversation. I really would like to hear from T. Allen on this because I had many private discussions with him on, you know, you've heard the word monopolism, capital surveillance, right? Yeah, this is exactly what I was meaning. And listening to Mr. Mark Palmer now, the problem is there's a lady who wrote a book, The Age of Capital Surveillance, Susanna Zuboff, very intelligent lady. And so what I've learned is, you know, You heard the narrative, that is the new oil, right?
Yeah.
So then, hence the 5G war between the West and the East China.
Mm-hmm.
So China has the most data because of the way they set up their surveillance system. They have algorithms on everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the social credit score system, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then the thing is, in the book, one of the things that was said, I never even finished reading the book because it opened up my eyes, but what she was saying is data should be anonymous at source. And so all of these stuff that Mr. Palmer disclosed shows you the height and the age of panopticism. That's what it's all based on. It's Orwellian. You know, these things are really, it's too late now for humanity. All of the armamentarium, all of the technological armamentarium is already in place to enslave humanity. People just can't see it because they are blindly walking into this BS and this mess. And the laws, the legislators are not smart enough, or not really, or not conscious enough to stay ahead of it through legislation. I'd like to hear from Steve Allen, please, man. Somebody who can enlighten the masses. And you know, I'd like to use another word, but I can't. Give thanks.
Thank you, 52. Well, I think I want to create a series out of the discussion, right? Because there's so much to talk about. I want to talk about, like, on-the-ground issues. Is it time for a national ID number? Is the NIB number the same thing as a national ID number? What degree of anonymity do you have left in the Bahamas, and will a national ID number destroy that? How much privacy can you maintain or retain with a national ID number? And do the benefits, is it the ends justify the means? Do the benefits outweigh the cons? Should anybody expect anonymity in the 21st century, especially given that we now have countries like China and India that are so large population-wise that the question can arise, can they allow anonymity and privacy, right, for their citizens? Can they allow it at all? Can they allow it in the same way that we in the Western world think that we experience anonymity and privacy, the privacy for the fancy people, like you got to pay a subscription mm-hmm. for privacy. Privacy, hopefully a constitution guarantees it to you.
I think one of the issues I have personally is that, you know, informed consent. So if a government wants to implement a certain thing, they should give us all the information, not just, oh, this is going to be the benefit for you.
Mm-hmm.
That smacks very much of an abusive relationship.
So you're saying that the government constantly acts as if it has a right to privacy beyond the scope laid out in legislation?
Well, they don't ever tell you the full story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you find out the negatives, the risks. They always come out later. And by that time, it's too late. You know, and your caller talked about the Chinese social credit scheme. Now, one of the reasons why they're so good at it, they've been at it a lot longer than us.
Mm-hmm.
It's over 20 years.
Yeah.
They were already 10 years ahead, but we can close that gap very quickly with the technology.
Why you want to?
And so, you know, the Chinese credit score is a way of, you know, gauging the trustworthiness of your, that's one of the objectives, gauging the trustworthiness of your citizens and corporations. While that sounds very good on the face of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, is that the real reason that they want to have it? And we know it's now a method of control.
Or is it the only reason? And let's, like,
not,
let's, what I'm saying, let's put let's put the theory of an agenda aside,
mm-hmm.
right?
They don't give you all the reasons.
Right.
This is why we need it. And so, you know, the average person will say, well, actually, it doesn't sound so bad. You know, we can catch a terrorist, you know, et cetera. But we know it doesn't catch terrorists. Otherwise, you know,
we would have caught a terrorist.
We would have caught loads of terrorists with that massive surveillance system that, you know, exists in the United States. So, you know, the methodology is secret. You know,
mm-hmm.
they don't explain the methodology of how they're going to do it. So the benefits, they're going to say to you, if you have a good social credit score, you're going to get discounts on utilities, you're going to be able to travel, you're going to be able to rent without paying deposits. And that all sounds very good, doesn't it?
Right, but my misery index doesn't determine my degree of citizenship. You know, and I think that's important to note. I'm a citizen. I don't have to contribute anything to be a citizen. I don't have to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to be Christian. I don't have to be prayerful,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't have to exercise. Mm-hmm. Like, I am a citizen, and the misery in my misery, personal misery index does not dictate my degree of citizenry, right? And so I...
Well, unfortunately, your definition of citizenship doesn't really accord with what's coming down the road, as that caller so rightly referred to, because there are a lot of consequences now. You know, once they have data on you, for example, in China, they have over 500 data points. Anything, talking to... Cecil this morning, it, you know, anything that if you they capture data on whether you are charging your cell phone or not. Now, if you don't charge it regularly to 100%, it means you're a lower, a worse credit risk. And so that is one of the
right,
many
because you're going to have to buy a new charger soon.
Well, you know, it means that you're not reliable. You know, it, that means you that is going to mean you're not you may not make your payment on your loan. That's only one indicator that they use the financial companies.
Thank God for BPL. We cannot. We, it is impossible, not just impractical, and not just improbable, but impossible to implement that type of system.
But I think we're a very different kettle of fish. But if you look at industrialized, developed countries, you know, like China, like well, it's not just China. Canada's embarking on this.
Yeah, a number
Germany,
of European,
European countries. Yeah. The political elite are slavering at the control that they can have on that. And the control is this, Aaron. If your social credit score falls below a certain level, we don't know what that could be, but it could be, you know, a certain level, you may not be able to travel. And this happens in China. They take away your dog if you do not walk your dog on a leash. Now, some people might say, oh, well, that's pretty a good thing, you know, but it seems pretty radical to me, but it could be anything like that. If you smoke, if you play excessive video games, that goes on to your social credit score. If you post fake news, and whoever decides
Bahamian parents design the system. So Bahamian parents design the system. If you don't do what I say, then you're going to be penalized. Not just in this house. You thought you was going to be an adult and escape into the free world and do what you want. Hey, no,
but you
got
know, last year a Chinese student was not allowed to enter the university of his choice because of his parents' bad credit rating. So it then creates an incentive. You know, if your parents have bad credit scores, it's going to affect your children.
Oh, that's got to be a constitutional problem.
But that's pretty scary, isn't it? That means somebody totally, you know, outside of my agency has their data is being used to influence my access. And so it's a way of controlling social behavior that everyone behaves themselves. And if you ask people, you know, the conformists, they think, a lot of people think it's a good thing. They'll say things like, well, they did interview somebody in China. He wouldn't give his name, but he was saying, you know, it's much, people are much nicer now. They stop at the crossings, you know, they don't accelerate as much as they do. So that would be great for you, right? Aaron would love that.
I thank you very much for the invite to have this discussion. I was listening to see how I can fit in. And we talk about anonymity and
privacy.
And privacy. And I want to explore on how that impacts the regular Joe Bohemian.
Yeah.
Some years ago, I had a checking account. Uh-huh. No one writes checks anymore. I had about $200 on it, and I forgot I had the checking account, right? And eventually, all of the funds depleted out of this checking account because of the fees that checking accounts tend to have.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, the bank contacted me and said, hey, Mr. Nuri, you owe us. I said, owe you? I don't owe anybody. I know I'm on top of my bills. What you talking about?
Yeah.
And she said that, you remember your checking account? I said, I left money there. It's $200. My $200 wasn't still there.
Yeah,
what do you mean I owe you money? You mean you owe me money? And they said, due to fees, my checking account has been depleted. More so, you continue to owe these fees, even though you're not using your checking account anymore. Mm-hmm. Over the past several years, you depleted. Now you owe us. So I said, close the checking account. I straight. Right?
Yeah.
And she said, no, you have to pay the fees owed to us before we close the account. And then you can come in and close your account. I said, is the account open? No, it's closed now. I said, so I'm good. I'm straight. He said, because you owe money. I said, well, I don't plan to pay you off for fees I didn't incur. So this is where my concern comes in. She said, then Mr. Nuri, we plan to report you to the credit bureau.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, but I don't owe you all money.
Mm-hmm. We can't have a credit bureau, I can tell you why, because the people who creating the credit bureau have no credit.
Well, I can't buy anything on credit, so they can't be a credit bureau.
But maybe the people who created it have no credit.
And she said that this will affect my credit in the future, that when I want to purchase things, that this credit bureau is going to police me. And I'm now going back to this anonymity and privacy, mm-hmm. right? I didn't give no one authorization to share my information with no credit bureau, mm-hmm. right? I don't believe I owe this bank any money because they are the one who depleted my money mm-hmm. from their account, right? In fact, I think they robbed me, right? Mm-hmm. So moving forward in this new Bahamas, right, there's no privacy in terms of I can live my life without mm-hmm. someone policing me, mm-hmm. right? So I'm a little concerned about that.
Financial privacy. Let's go to this call, and then I want to talk about a couple mm-hmm. of other spaces in which Bahamians going to have to tackle with this question. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Hi, good morning. How's everyone today?
Good.
I wanted to just make a comment regarding the credit bureau and how it is going to be very challenging going forward if the persons who work in the bank or who manage this process mm-hmm. do not fully understand how this works. I had a recent experience where I wanted to borrow a couple thousand as a top-up to an existing personal loan. And I have very good credit over the years. I pay my bills on time. Everything's current. But during COVID, I had a credit card with another bank, not the bank that I was getting the loan from. Mm-hmm. And I refused to stand on, I didn't have online banking for that account, and I refused to stand on a line that was like 10 miles long to pay mm-hmm. a credit card for $100. So, of course, I went into a couple of months where I owed. Mm-hmm. So they were asking me, they said, we see we're on the credit bureau. They have a note here where they're flagging you for non-payment of a credit card not attached to the bank. And I was like, excuse me? They said, yes. I said, well, that's a credit card I have with another bank, but that's all current. That's actually at zero balance now. Oh, yeah, well, 3 years ago, there was some outstanding balances that weren't paid on time, and we have to get this cleared before we can process the loan. It's like, I asked the guy if he was for real. I said, sir, are you seriously telling me that a credit card payment 3 years ago of $50 a month that I refused to stand on a 10-mile line long, 10 miles long line to pay during COVID is going to affect me getting a top-up of a loan with you, a couple thousand? So they really got to try to figure this thing out because, you know, in the Bahamas, we do a check-the-box.
Listen,
outside the box.
You're positing, right? What you posited on the table just now was so sensible and rational. Let me tell you something ridiculous that I experienced. I don't think a bank who couldn't put a sign up outside their ATM to say that one of their ATMs wasn't working, who couldn't fix the door and secure their customers, who couldn't put a notice up on the door to say that the door was broken, that don't presume that you are secure inside this room and you're taking out your money. I don't think a institution, right, that cannot communicate simply with its customers by posting printed pieces of paper on the glass on the front door large enough for people to see, I don't think institutions like that have the moral or legal authority to tell me I owe anything, to put any credit rating on me. I could be honest with y'all. I don't think the government has the credit. I mean, the government don't have the literal credit.
Yeah.
They can't find a balance to a deficit.
Yeah.
They can't explain to us what's going on with the debt. In fact, the only thing I can say is good on you, Prime Minister. Good on you for finding the strength to apologize for the people who are doing their job trying to keep the whole country in check. I don't think these guys have the moral authority to bureau or credit a banana from a banana tree in the bush.
Yeah.
And I think that the Bahamian people need to start standing up and demanding that if we're going to do things, we're going to do them with sense and order.
Exactly. Yeah, I think the concept of the act and what it's seeking to achieve mm-hmm. is a good thing. But it has to be applied mm-hmm. sensical, mm-hmm. and it has to be applied where certain minor amounts or certain things that may have happened 3-4 years ago, if you see where the record was paid up or what have you, that it comes off of it. But everything literally is in it. It looks like it's fly, so it goes into that system, mm-hmm. and they have to ask you everything. I asked the guy, in fact, I was so clueless when he first asked me about it. I had totally forgotten about the credit card. I don't even use the credit card anymore.
No.
Credit card is paid up.
Yep.
But during COVID, I just wasn't standing on the line to go pay a $50 credit card bill.
Absolutely.
You know?
Ma'am.
So anyway, they got to figure it out. But I just wanted to share that.
No, man, absolutely. I just want to say this. Gentlemen, I can pretend like you're all not in the room. Pretend like you're all not in the room. I'm just trying to figure out, how could my prime minister stand in the house and feign, that's like pretend, it's like pretend in the face of everybody who could see that you only pretending, feign anonymity for organizations who he can turn around and say, oh me, the Bahamian public, hundreds of thousands of dollars. It appears as if you trying to give them some degree of anonymity, some degree of privacy, and they owe me money. But you've created a credit bureau agency that is effectively going to destroy my life within a broken system that is already destroying my life with no regard to the extent to which dysfunctional government systems create an environment in which I can't pay my bills. And y'all want to sit there and talk to me about how I don't know the job or the role of an MP and I don't know what it takes to function as a cabinet minister and I don't know how hard it is to figure out how to make a public disclosure and I am the PM and the deputy prime minister, an office that does not even exist, looking at you in your face through the mic of a reporter and telling you, well, I expect it to be in by tomorrow, which is 2 days after the deadline. A deadline which I am certain has been moved in anonymity.
Where's the $10,000 fine, the confiscation of your assets?
Bishop Cooper say that's just a matter of fact, man.
Where is that?
Bishop Cooper say don't watch nothing, man.
Where's the two years in jail?
They have a degree of privacy that they allowed as MPs and cabinet ministers to be as the general public or not. I didn't mean for it to go in this direction, you know. Mm-hmm. I would like to say to my caller, thank you for calling, but it's your fault. No, it's not your fault. It's my fault. Let's go. Caller, you're on the clock.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How you doing?
Okay, wonderful.
You ain't calling from the bank, eh?
No, I'm just okay, cool. Talking, though. But listen.
Yes, ma'am.
I just marvel when I listen to your, especially your host, you know, talk show host.
Yes, ma'am.
I think the mic maker feels so powerful.
It is, and Juju.
But just to say anything.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, like how you said the prime minister is pretending. That's your opinion.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, I'm...
Don't mind. Pause. 1 second.
Yeah, that's your opinion.
Okay, 1 second. I ain't gonna hang up on you. I ain't gonna hang up on you or nothing. I'm just saying, did you watch the ZNS broadcast where the reporter called and
knew... I'm saying to you,
yeah.
I listen to yours.
Yeah, yeah.
And because you all get this mic, it makes you all feel so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You can spew anything and, you know, like the man is pretending. Make sure you all say that's your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Yes,
okay,
ma'am.
Thanks.
It is my opinion because it was the ZNS reporter that called the name of the company. The prime minister laughed and kikied about how he, and quote, I ain't gonna call the name, even though he published the name in the documentation disseminated to media. It is my opinion that he is feigning anonymity, that he was creating an environment in which he could pretend like he was in, that they would not be known. That's my opinion. Don't mind that it happened. Let's read some text.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, ma'am. This mic does something. That's a beautiful point. I can have a whole series of shows. No, this is serious, and it's a conversation we need to have with our children because the lens, not only does a mic embolden you, but being in front of a lens emboldens you as well. It's an important conversation. And as always, I like to thank my callers for contributing because there is a spark of genius in everything everybody says. All right, let's get to these texts quickly. Great show as usual. Inland Revenue soon start charging for protesting. Well, if there is a fee to be paid for an application to protest, there must be VAT attached, eh? Great show as usual. Inland Revenue also soon start charging for breathing oxygen. Ah, yes, something's happened. We just want to say condolences to those who were shot and the gentleman, I think, who lost his life in Fox Hill last night. two shot dead. Both men died. We say condolences. Cecil, you wanted to say something?
I adding to the conversation, right? We now know that it seems as if our government is pursuing taxes, right? You see that they are tightening their belts in certain areas to make sure that the taxes are paid. And with that, to get your business license, you would if you owe at certain different entities, you can't get it. Even in terms of your property tax, if you haven't, and forgive me for the lack of the right wording, if you haven't paid certain parts of your property taxes, you still won't be able to get a license for this and whatever it is. And going back to anonymity and having the bank now police for the government, having credit bureaus now police, again, for the government, the freedom of being an individual seems to be closing in, where you could say, man, I will pay this bill, but I will hold off on this bill because this is not important to me. And then later on, you find that all of it is attached. And then if you cannot move forward or you cannot survive because all of the bills are now connected moving forward. And I am a little concerned about that.
And how important it is to consult stakeholders. And stakeholders are the people who you're going to be recording their credit. Let's go to the phone line. Good morning, caller. You are on the clock.
Yes, good morning. How are you doing, Aaron?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Yes. I wanted to ask this question a long time. I mean, I called on it. I went to supposed to get my, at least I went to go and get my business license because I have an online store. I sell things online and everything and all that. But I used to have a store one time ago. So tell me this. NIB used to be attached to your, if you don't pay NIB, you wouldn't get your business license, right?
Right.
That's how they had it set up, right?
Yeah.
All right, then. So now I went to NIB, close out, pay out my NIB full. But I wasn't, I didn't went and close out and let them know by inland to the license place that I shut my shop down.
Okay.
So I didn't went there for years, but I closed out National Insurance. So when I went back to apply for business license, they told me that I owed them for 9 years. Years, right?
Of national insurance.
Not national insurance. I paid national insurance. I paid national insurance. That's the main one you have to give. Because you can't get no business license if you didn't. At that time, if you want your national insurance up to current. So I went and applied for business license. They approved it and everything, you know. But I the name was a little different. And what happened is that when they realized that they still see the horse inside it, they say, this guy owes.
Yeah.
So I was wondering now, I thought if National Insurance and the business license together, automatically they're supposed to know my shop was closed down. So how they allow the shop to run for 9 years without paying them? And then number two, if you have agents coming around to a shop, automatically they were supposed to contact me and say, so-and-so, that your shop is closed on me. Didn't know that. So why they had why they continue to let that run on for 9 years, and the agents never went out and checked me because when I was in business,
I can tell you why. Because they're trying to shift the burden onto you. They're trying to shift the burden of proof onto you. Here's what I'm going to recommend you do. Go to the Eugene DePuch Law School Legal Aid Clinic. You know Rosetta, where the Labor Department is on Rosetta?
Yeah.
Go there and ask them for, you want an appointment at the Legal Aid Clinic, the Eugene DePuch Law School Legal Aid Clinic. And there you're gonna speak to a lawyer who could give you far better advice than I could ever give.
All right, thanks. But I want more thing to say before I go.
Yeah.
And now I get my business, I paid for the business license. I lost my money because I paid the lady and everything. They shut it down, so I lost my money. They told me that I got to come in to pay that off or else I wouldn't get it.
You need a lawyer. You need a lawyer away.
Yeah. I wanted to get that off. I wanted to get it because they ain't working with me.
I understand. Listen, and we're not going to be mad at them. They are a system. They are a policy. Don't think of them as individual people.
No, I understand that, but they need to be. That's why the system is so bad in this country, because no one is, the person ain't doing their job, because if that lady used to come around all the time checking me out when I was in business, she would come around and check me over when
she didn't know the business was closed, and then she would make inquiries. Yeah, she would make inquiries with NIB to see, okay, are they still paying? Then they would contact you and say, sir, it seems as if this business is closed down. Have you completed all of the steps to ensure that the state and Inland Revenue knows that the business is closed? I with you, sir.
Yeah.
But listen, I'm all out of time. Thank you very much for your call. And I want to, you know, to everyone out there who's having a query, Eugene DePuch Law School Legal Aid Clinic is available to you for advice. All right, guys, I'm going to try and read these texts. Before I get to the text, I want to say this. There were so many issues that arose that we didn't get to talk about, like the right of a mother to privacy, like a pregnant woman to privacy, the right of the, how it balances with the right of the father to know and the right of the child to know, and how the father's right to privacy is balanced with all of these other rights, right? That's one place where it comes up. We're also approaching conversations about health passports and who has a right to know your health details and in what circumstances. And we've seen with the pandemic and COVID that this is a very hot issue. Producers, start playing the music. I can try to read a couple of these texts. A text here says, Aaron, I remember that from 2014, there was a confirmed report stating that the NSA was recording every phone call in the Bahamas. It was called Sommelgate. Is that still happening? If this is still happening, we have no privacy in the 242. I think it is still happening. The bank tried that with me, told them they could report me to Jesus. I don't care. Ask all your past and present policymakers if their bills are up to date, and I see these initiatives will continue to protect the status quo. I want to ask you all who had to help Fred Ramsey pay his court fines in the Alstom case. Y'all, kid, you joke too much. You're a little goatee. I don't understand it. Another text. Good morning. Your guest made a good point. You have to ask for a copy of your signed documents when you open an account. My bank had me on minimum payments when I specifically requested full payments. There are so many procedures, policies, issues, details that we have to align and fix before we could enter this digital regime called the 21st century. It's just so much work to be done before you could begin penalizing people in ways that irrevocably changes their lives. Anyway, producer, thank you for your grace and mercy. We're all out of time. Mr. Newry, thank you for joining me. Mr. Parker, and I beg you some time this week, Mr. Newry, for us to continue this conversation. You guys have a great day. Guardian Radio AM is up next.